Good morning, everybody. Everyone good? Good. Good to see you. So my name's Matt Vincent, and I know we've never met, but I'm really excited to be here. We began having conversations with Dave and Zach a while ago about your church, and you guys were on a journey to find a kind of a new, broader family to belong to and a new home. And so I feel like I've been excited to be here for a while and to be with you, and so I'm super excited to be here. About 6 years ago, I left a church I was pastoring called the Meeting House in Oakville, and sensing God was doing something in our family and that something new was coming up. And so in our living room, we began meeting with some friends and started praying. And out of that, we planted this church in Oakville called Reunion, still part of the same Being Christ Church of Canada denomination. We planted this church. And then lo and behold, other kind of things started happening around us as other people who were also interested in innovating and creating new spaces for people who were interested in the life and teachings of Jesus, who were open spiritually and curious, began forming. And so now, kind of 5-6 years later, we have a group of churches across Canada. We have a little map here. We have a group of churches across Canada from Richmond, BC to St. John's, Newfoundland, and a bunch in the Ontario area, and obviously we got some filling in to do, but we continue to pray that God would help us as a denomination, as a network of churches, figure out what it means to bring new kind of spiritual communities into new cities across Canada. And then you'll see kind of at the top right there, Kuwait, which maybe feels like really strange for a Canadian denomination, and it is. So I got an email a couple years ago. Actually, it was through Instagram, a direct message through Instagram from this guy who said he's in Kuwait. And you ever get one of those emails where it's like, I got $50 million. If you help me, like, you're going to get like 30% of this or something? Felt like it was one of those kind of like really random, crazy things. And I replied back to him, found out this guy's name was Peter, and we began this conversation. And there was this church. It's kind of a church that's meeting in Kuwait City that is not registered with the government, underground kind of. Like 100 people from all over the world who are in the country for teaching, education, oil, banking, all kinds of reasons. And this church had formed. And they weren't connected with anyone. They were looking for affiliation. They had been following us somehow online, got connected with us. And so now this Canadian denomination, as we pray and plant churches across Canada, has a church in Kuwait, which is really, really crazy. The first time I went to Kuwait, I remember I had a number of Zoom calls with Peter. All these calls back and forth. And then the first time I went to visit him a couple years ago, I was landing in the airport. I'd never been in the Middle East before, landing in the airport, and I was about to exit the airport, and I had this thought dawn on me. It didn't hit me until I was already in Kuwait. Like, I don't know if this is like a huge hoax. Like, what if this guy actually isn't in Kuwait? Walked out the doors, he was there. It's all been good since. So anyways, I am long ramble. I'm just so happy to be here. So glad that we get to call each other family. And as Dave was talking to us about as we were talking about coming and visiting, knowing that you guys are starting this series, began last month, looking at spiritual disciplines, rhythms, practices of what it means to kind of push in and lean into Jesus and be formed and shaped by him. I'm really excited to have some time to share with you some things that we have been learning over the last number of years. The church I was pastoring in Oakville, we worked through this a couple years ago together and found it to be not only really exciting and something that kind of gave us a new sense of life with Jesus, but something that was really, really difficult as well. Really, really challenging. I think it's called discipline, a spiritual discipline for a reason. It's like you don't just fall into it easily. It takes work and intentionality. So today we're going to talk about silence and solitude. But let me start with this. So I just want to talk about the idea of sleeping first. So not because I'm tired. I know clocks changed, but I had a good sleep last night. Hope you had a good rest. Everyone feeling okay? I don't feel like you guys are all super tired. But let me just talk about sleep for a second. So when I was a little kid, I wanted to be really, really quiet when I went to sleep. I loved the idea of it being quiet, but I didn't want it to be too dark. So I always wanted my bedroom door open just a little bit, just so some light from the living room where my parents were usually up reading or watching TV, just enough light would come in where I'd know, like, I'm not alone, right? So I wanted it quiet, but not totally dark. And then as I got older in my teenage years, I wanted it as dark as possible, like blackout blinds down, all that business, and I wanted it as quiet as possible. And I usually, by that stage, was staying up later than my parents, so the house was really quiet. And I just, if there's any noise, I couldn't handle it. I like to be able to know that when I'm going to sleep, you know, in the winter, you could hear the furnace turn on, and the wind kind of, not the wind, the heat starting to come through the vents, right? It was so quiet in the house. I used to love that. If it was too noisy or if there's any light, I had a hard time sleeping. Now I'm in this really weird zone of life. Maybe some of you get this, but I still like it really dark. I really want it to be dark, but if it's too quiet, I can't sleep. Anyone else like that? So I'm like one of those, we're that family who have like fans going in their room. We're not alone, right? Come on. So we have a ceiling fan, which is, I guess, good for air circulation, but it doesn't really make any noise. So we have an additional fan on a bedside table that makes noise. And if that's not on, I can't sleep. So even when I travel, if I'm at a hotel, I try to figure out how to make sure that like heating or air conditioning, whatever, that fan is on all the time. I know it's terrible for the environment. That's a talk for another day. But I want to have that going the whole time. Or if there's a bathroom fan, I want that running the whole time. It's even tipped to the point as a family that a few years ago, we were going on this cruise together. We booked like this little cabin, all five of us. We have three kids, three teenagers. We're all going to cram into one room. And we're like, okay, so how's this all going to work? So we're like, we're going to pack a fan. So we put it in our suitcase, showed up there. I'm like, that's not a big deal. It's just a fan. We're going to plug it in. It will help us all sleep. So when we get to our room, they kind of load the bags for you. And so when we got to our room, I noticed my suitcase wasn't in our room. But there was a sticker, a little kind of ticket, and said, your bag is not arrived. Come down to security. So I'm like, oh, man, what? So I went down to the security, and they said, you're not allowed to have a fan on board. It's a fire hazard, something. We're going to hold it for you. But at the end of the cruise, you can come and pick it up, and you can take it home with you. So you'll get it back. You just can't have it. And so somehow during that week, we managed to not kill each other. We managed to get sleep. It was all good. But on the last day, as we were about to get off the boat, I took the ticket that was kind of a marker for my fan to the downstairs lounge room. It was like the big dining room, which has now been kind of converted into everyone who was trying to smuggle things that they weren't allowed to. So there's this whole lineup of people. And so I was just kind of watching, like, what were people trying to get on here? Mostly it was alcohol, right? So lots of people were like picking up bottles of alcohol because they were trying to sneak it in different ways because they didn't want to pay for it on the boat. Most people. But then I would say like 1 in 10, it was like a fan. Right? Like 1 in 10, they'd kind of come back with this fan. And I felt like we started getting this little like camaraderie going. So I felt like as they would walk by, I'd kind of give them a little nod, feeling like we are in that same club. Got my fan, I didn't feel so embarrassed. But I can't sleep if it's too quiet. Something about me, if it's too quiet, I can't do it. And I think on a spiritual level, some of us, maybe if you stop and think about it, if it gets too quiet on a spiritual level, it's really, really difficult for us to just be. We're so used to being busy, productive, finding our identity in what we produce, that when we stop and are still and are quiet, we don't know what to do with that. Why is that? Isn't it so weird that when we just stop and find stillness with God, it feels so uncomfortable? Maybe you're not in that place. Maybe you're like, no, that quiet solitude for me is a beautiful thing. I don't struggle with that at all. But I think for many of us, the idea of stopping and being still is so foreign to our culture. We're always in this rat race of doing and doing and doing and doing. And even on a spiritual level, we want to always have something going in the background like a fan because it allows us to kind of always be distracted. We're not fully present because there's always something a little more going on. So that's what I want to talk to you about today. I want to look at the life of Jesus and just pull out, we're going to go pretty quickly through it, a number of times where we see examples of Jesus withdrawing, pulling himself back to be alone and to be quiet and to be with the Father. Now, when you look at it, as we go through it, you'll notice that it's not just in one kind of a circumstance. It's just not like when life was difficult, here's what he did, right? Because sometimes for us, our practice may be when things get really hard, then we'll seek to have some time with God. But as we're going to go through with Jesus, we're going to see these different rhythms, these different ways he did this, and recognize that, I hope you'll recognize that this was part of a rhythm of life for Jesus. It was part of like his daily rhythm, and we get these snapshots as we read through the Gospels. So if you want, we're going to kind of roll through them pretty quickly together. Just a note, too, when you think of silence and solitude, sometimes if you're reading about it, they get lumped into one idea, like solitude equals being alone on your own. It doesn't mean being lonely, though. So solitude does mean withdrawing and pulling back, but it's not connected to loneliness. And then silence is this idea of no kind of noise and even kind of holding back the desire for us to speak, right? Because sometimes when we want to spend time with God, we want to fill all the air with our own voice. Because then when we stop speaking, we don't know who we are anymore. It's so ingrained into us to constantly be doing and saying. So let's read through these things. some examples from the life of Jesus. So in Matthew chapter 4, we're going to roll. So I'll give you a little context as we go, but here's kind of something that's been going on. Jesus has just been baptized. He's about to begin his earthly ministry. There had been this affirmation from the Father saying, this is my son who makes me very pleased in what he's going to do. And immediately after his baptism, Jesus is pulled out and led by the Spirit, it says, into the wilderness. Now we know, if you know the story, it's for like trial and temptation. But there's a sense that before Jesus began his prominent earthly ministry and work, he has this extended period of solitude and quiet and being alone. It's interesting. Jesus pulls out by himself for this intense time. And then if you keep going in Matthew's gospel, Matthew chapter 14, we read this really interesting account where John, who had baptized Jesus, was in prison by the king, and in a weird kind of twisted series of events, he ends up losing his life. He ends up being beheaded. It's this wish that the birthday girl wants. She wants to have his head on a plate, which, you know, another series on how to know if your kids are screwed up, that might be something to talk about. But John ends up being beheaded, and then we read when the news reaches Jesus of the loss of life, it says this in Matthew 14, 13, as soon as Jesus heard the news, he left in a boat to a remote area to be alone. So in this period of not only preparing for something new, but also in this period of receiving some sad and disappointing news, something that he had this relationship, they were family. And upon hearing of John's death, he withdraws and pulls back. And then shortly right thereafter, continuing in Matthew chapter 14, the crowds are always finding Jesus. They're following him. So after this really intense time of teaching, of healing, feeding 5,000, which it kind of records the men, say maybe 10 or 12,000 people, this miraculous feeding of people, Jesus has just been pouring himself out, pouring himself out, pouring himself out. It says this in verse 22 and 23. Immediately after this, Jesus insisted that his disciples get back into the boat and cross to the other side of the lake while he sent the people home. After sending them home, he went up into the hills by himself to pray. Night fell while he was there alone. So he's poured himself out. He's given, 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 given. What does he need to do? He needs to pull back. He needs to have time on his own. He needs to be by himself, and he needs to pray. Mark's gospel records some too. Mark chapter 1, again, after pretty intense time of serving and helping people, of ministering to people. Mark chapter 1, verse 35 says, before daybreak, so he's not ending his day this way, he's beginning now his day this way. It says, before daybreak the next morning, Jesus got up and went out to an isolated place to pray. That's how he's beginning his day. Luke chapter 6 says, one day soon afterward, Jesus went up on a mountain to pray, and he prayed to God all night. At daybreak, he called together all those disciples and chose 12 of them to be his apostles. So in this one, it's interesting. He's about to make a pretty significant decision on the people and the friends he's going to gather around him to do this next thing, to inaugurate the kingdom, to bring in this new way of being and relating to God. And before he makes these kind of selections, these choices of who to invite into his inner circle, he spends this intense time being present with God. Let me give you one last one here from Matthew 26. This is right before Jesus is going to be arrested and betrayed and crucified, kind of go through that whole thing. This may be familiar for some of you, but it says, then Jesus went with them to the olive grove called Gethsemane, and he said, sit here while I go over there to pray. He took Peter and Zebedee's two sons, James and John, and he became anguished and distressed. He told them, my soul is crushed with grief to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. Then he went on a little further and bowed his face to the ground, praying, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup of suffering be taken away from me. Yet I want your will to be done, not mine. So as you read the Gospels, we see this pattern emerging. Sometimes we can use the phrase, a rule of life, which is often associated and attached to the conversation around spiritual disciplines, this rule of life. What are the things that we incorporate and add into the rhythm of our life, the rule of our life, that help define and shape us in a spiritual way? So can I just say something about the pray thing? Because in a lot of those passages, it would say and indicate that Jesus went somewhere to pray. So in our Western mindset, prayer often equals work, right? So prayer sometimes can feel like it's all those things we have to do in order to be formed, to share with God everything we want, everything we want, everything we want. But in a kind of a Middle Eastern Jewish mindset, prayer is this idea of being formed and shaped. So the primary purpose of prayer isn't just to tell God everything you want, which sometimes we can unintentionally fall into. That can be our pattern. Rather, prayer is this process. This primary purpose of prayer then is to be shaped and formed by God. So when we think about Jesus went up to this mountain all night and prayed, like what on earth could he have talked about all night? Because we think he's talking all night rather than saying, what if he was sharing from his heart? But what if the whole night was actually about receiving and being shaped? The primary purpose of God, of prayer, is to be shaped and formed by God. And so we see this pattern emerging in Jesus' life where it's like this rule of life. He seems to have this ongoing pattern. So when he's about to do something significant, he withdraws and prays. When he's about to make a big decision, he withdraws and prays. When he learns terrible news about the loss of a family member and friend, he withdraws and prays. We see this over and over in the life of Jesus, this pattern. So for those of us here, as we have this conversation around disciplines, if you've chosen to follow Jesus, if you'd say, I'm a follower of Jesus, then it might be good for us to stop and say, so what was the rhythm and pattern of life for Jesus, and how then should that inform the way we do life? And if you're just kind of open and curious and wondering who Jesus was, and that's what brings you here today, that's cool too. We would say that the way Jesus acts and operates is our model for life. And so if he's doing this, what might that mean for us in our own rule of life, our own idea of silence and solitude and spiritual disciplines? Gary Thomas, in his book Sacred Pathways, says this: all I know is that it's in those solitary moments that colors regain their brightness, truth regains its clarity, and reality loses its fog. There's something in the quiet, in the stillness, in the waiting, where everything finds a new perspective again. We get clarity. There was that movie years ago, I just lost what it was called, where it's all black and white. Tobey Maguire's in it. It's all black and white, and then something happens, and then everything becomes color again. Pleasantville. Yeah, thank you. So that's what this makes me think of when I read that quote from Gary Thomas. It's like this idea of like everything in life is black and white, maybe a little bit fuzzy, and then all of a sudden, as we're connected and spending time with Jesus, it turns from black and white and fuzziness into like full color and clarity, and everything goes from like, you know, on a TV when you used to have rabbit ears and trying to get your signal in. Now I'm dating myself, right? So when we grew up, we used to have like, actually when we first started, we had no TV in our family. Then when I was like maybe grade 4 or 5, we got a TV. It was a huge deal for us. And we had these rabbit ears that you would have to move to kind of get a channel in. And sometimes you'd have to like continue to hold it. And so like whoever draw like the worst straw might have to stand like this for a while and watch the TV. Anyways, this idea of like, it goes to high definition. Something changes as we have this interaction where we start to see things in a whole new way. Is that what was going on for Jesus? Was there something about withdrawing and being quiet and praying and spending time with the Father that allowed him to have a new perspective, to find clarity for things that were black and white and maybe obscure, to find new definition and meaning, and he had a new sense of understanding? So let's do this. What's our time like? Oh. Okay, we are going to do it. Okay, so I want everyone put your, just be comfortable. Wherever you're sitting, just sit comfortably. Okay, and I want you to close your eyes. And I'm going to get you to be quiet. We're going to just have a moment of quiet. Because really, when do we do this? We do it at like a sporting event when we're trying to remember like a hockey player who passed away, or we do it on Remembrance Day, maybe at a funeral. But when do we ever sit quietly? We can talk about why that is and how awkward it will be. But let's just, I'm going to set my timer here, and we're just going to be quiet. And I'll tell you when we're done, okay? Just be quiet, close your eyes, take some deep breaths in and out. Here we go. Okay, how long do you think that was? You can shout it out. How long? 30 seconds? Any other thoughts? It's 45 seconds. So for some of you, that's the first 45 seconds of quiet you've had all day, all weekend, all week, all month, all year. I have no idea. But it feels awkward, right? I acknowledge the idea of sitting quiet in a large group is like a weird thing. But the thing about being quiet is like we don't know how to do it because we never practice it. We always have that fan spinning in the background. There always needs to be some kind of activity and action going on because we don't know what to do with ourselves. Who would describe themselves as an introvert? Throw up your hand. Which I know for an introvert is a huge, huge ask. Okay, so I'm introverted for sure too. I love being with people, but I recharge just by being by myself. So sometimes when I travel, especially if it's a long trip, like overseas, and I'm traveling by myself, I love the idea that that's coming. I look forward to it, I think about it, because even though airports are busy, flights are busy, the idea that I'm gonna be by myself, no one knows me, I don't have to speak anything, especially if it's like a 24-hour trip with like connections and things, like I love that. You know, and you always hope that you don't get the chatty person in the seat beside you. Sometimes you read those books about Christians who like get on planes and they know like whoever's next to me, like they're gonna meet Jesus by the end of this flight. That's not me. Like I'm like universal sign of like don't talk to me. The movie starts as soon as I buckle my seatbelt, you know? I just love the idea of like just being in my own little bubble. I recharge that way. I have a good friend on the other hand who's complete opposite end of the spectrum. He recently was telling us about this trip he went on. They went down to a timeshare thing in the U.S., and when he got there and they were checking in, he saw this guy in front of them in line, and so he didn't really know him, but he just kind of noticed him. And then later on, a day or two later, he noticed the same guy, so they kind of said hi, exchanged pleasantries, and then he bumped into him again at the pool, and then they started up this conversation, and then one night they were over at the grills that you can use, and they're barbecuing some food, and they had this whole thing, and they ended up having dinner together, and he was telling me about how wonderful this was, that he was away on vacation, he met these new people. And as he's telling me this story, I'm like, this is the worst possible thing in the world. Like, how on earth would you go away and then want to like spend time with people you don't even know and you'll never see again? So I'm a terrible Christian. He's a great Christian. But the idea of that, like, that just like freaks me out. So depending on your wiring and your personality, the idea of isolation, of silence and solitude hits us in different ways. If you're an introvert, you're like, this sounds like the best discipline in the world. I just can't wait to be by myself. The thing, though, is the spiritual discipline of silence and solitude isn't just about being away from people and not saying anything. There's intentionality to it. The whole point of it is that you're learning to how to connect with God, to be changed and transformed by Him while you're still, while you're away, while you're quiet. So to think, I'm not doing anything, no one's talking to me, I'm not saying anything, I must be really good at this spiritual discipline. Unless you're connecting it back to transformation and relationship with God, you're missing the main part. For extroverts, on the other end of the spectrum, the idea of silence and solitude as a discipline probably sounds like horrendous to you. The idea of stopping, slowing down, being quiet just feels like the worst possible thing. For you, the challenge will be just to stop, just to be quiet. Just to like convince yourself that there's something good that can come at the other end of that discipline. That's going to be the hard thing. Depending on your wiring and your personality, that ends up happening. There's this quote by Ruth Haley Barton when she's talking about this. She says, "In silence and solitude, we stop believing our own press. In silence and solitude, we stop believing our own press." So think about the things that give you a sense of identity on who you are. Who are those voices? What are those things? What kind of fuels your sense of identity and purpose and mission? What are those external voices and factors? And what are they saying to you? Because sometimes those things become our guardrails through life, and that's who we think we are. But she would note that when you withdraw and you're quiet and still before God, that those things start to fade away. And that's where it gets scary. Because we're so used to being defined by what other people say to us, and we're not sure what it means to be defined by simply listening to who God is and what He wants to say to us, what He wants to impress upon us. And we stop believing our own press. So if we feel like, man, I got it, I'm doing great, if that's kind of the voices we're hearing, then sometimes it can be challenging to stop because then we're confronted with our own cracks, the places where we do have brokenness and needs help in healing and surrender. Maybe on the other hand, if you're like, all I hear is like, I'm failing, I'm struggling, everyone sees it, it's in the public eye, I can't handle this. Perhaps in the silence and stillness, you hear the voice of God saying, I see you, I love you, I'm with you. We stop believing the press of what everyone else is saying. We tune into what the voice of God is saying and what he's wants to do and how he wants to shape us. It's so important to note what is the thing that is shaping us and changing us. Okay, here's what I want to do. We're not rushing too much here. So here's what I want to do. So at the church I've led for the last 6 years, we have this regular practice of listening to each other, which I know if that's not part of your rhythm, it can feel very, very strange. But let me just explain it before I send you to have a little bit of a conversation with the people around you. Here's why we're doing it. Again, recognizing some extroverts are like, finally, we get to talk. This is so great. And other people are like, oh my gosh, this is the worst. Here's why we do it. Because while I'm trying to guide and have a conversation, while I've been thinking about some of these things for a while, I'm preparing to kind of lead us in this conversation, we recognize that God is present leading us by his Spirit. Some of the songs we sang, the prayers that were offered when my sister was leading us, like there are things that we recognize to be true, that God is present with us, with his people, and guiding us by his Spirit. So one of the problems with one of these one-way dialogues is that we assume that the person up front has more answers, but perhaps the thing that God is stirring in you right now is the most important thing that we need to listen to as a community this morning, because I actually really believe that, and I've seen it to be true many, many times in our own community, that sometimes I'll have all this excitement, I've done all this prep, and then someone will say something after we've had some conversation, and everyone is like, whew, that's the moment, that's the thing that we're supposed to pay attention to today. So I want us to open it up to have a conversation. So here's how it's going to work. I'm going to throw up a couple questions on the screen to get you going, so you can turn to just the person beside you, and have this conversation. You can turn around in your chairs and have the conversation with a few people, whatever you like. There's no rules on how big the group is, how small the group is. If you're someone who doesn't want to have the conversation, that is totally okay too. We always say there's an out, you bring out your phone and you scroll. That's the universal sign of just leave me alone. Because maybe this morning you actually just need to be alone and you don't want to have the conversation. That's totally fine. You maybe need to get another coffee, go to the washroom. But want to have some time to say, what is God saying in this conversation? So here's some questions that I thought we could use to keep the conversation rolling. So what has been your experience with solitude and silence? Have you ever experimented with implementing this discipline into your daily rhythm? What did you learn? Number two, what are thoughts on the quick examples from Jesus' life, that rhythm that Jesus seemed to demonstrate, what stood out, or something altogether different? You don't have to go through all of these. These are just suggestions. But take a few minutes. We're going to give you a couple minutes to have this conversation because I want to see, even as we're opening up, I know this is like a really like high level flyby idea on this discipline, but what is standing out to you? What's impressing you? What is God maybe saying to you or stirring in you? Does this make sense? So you're going to turn, you're going to have a conversation. I'm going to keep track of time. I'm going to call you back together, and then we're going to hear from each other. So you have to be ready. So you can say something that you also said to your group, or you can say something that someone else in your group said on their behalf. You don't have to single them out. But I want to start listening to see if there's themes that are emerging that are important for us to pay attention to that God is kind of leading us as a community dynamically through. Okay? We can maybe even, guys at the back, put on a little music so it's not too quiet. It'll be like our fan in the background. That's okay. Let's do this. Take a few minutes, like seriously like 4 or 5 minutes, okay? So you have some time. This is not like, hey, how you doing? Okay, back to it. This is serious, okay? All right, go. Have a bit of a conversation. Go for it. All right, I'm going to call you back together here. Sorry to interrupt your conversations. Just going to interrupt. And let's just take a minute now just to listen to each other. So the key here is to be concise and to the point. But if there's something that you were talking about in your group that was raised, maybe even a theme that a few people agreed to, can you just voice that on behalf of your group and we'll see what was standing out, what's been going on? So anybody? Just say it loud enough so that we can hear together.
So whenever you're in solitude and silence, your mind Right.
How do you bring yourself up? It's always triggers that you're moving away from the silence.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe even in that 45 seconds we had as we're trying to be still, our minds probably jump to something, right? We always jump to the next thing. So there's this thing often people will use called centering prayer, where it'll be like a word or a phrase that they will always use that when they are aware that they're drifting, it helps them bring them back. It helps bring them back to the center. So sometimes people will just use the word Jesus. Jesus. So for me, I have to be a bit more explicit. I have to be a bit more focused. So I often would say, Jesus, I'm here and I'm listening. And then my mind would go, Jesus, I'm here and I'm listening. And I was joking about it in the beginning that it's being a discipline because it really is. Probably in the first season of trying this, it will feel so foreign and so strange because we're so used to being active and producing that it'll feel like, what's the point in this? But I would encourage you to give it a try. Sometimes the thing about spiritual disciplines is try them out. Work with them. Exercise them. See what God teaches you through them. And then 15 seconds of being able to be focused before having to center back may turn into 30 seconds, may turn into a minute or 2 minutes. But there's nothing wrong. It's not bad if you say, Jesus, I'm here and I'm listening. Jesus, I'm here and I'm listening. That's true. Our minds jump all over the place. Thanks for saying that. What else?
One of the guys in our group mentioned he finds this easier when he's out in nature and creation.
Beautiful. Yeah, yeah. That's a great point. So, yeah, your actual physical setting, what does that have to contribute to our sense of silence and quiet before God? Yeah, solitude doesn't have to be in this, like, bleak room with nothing else going on. Maybe going through a walk through the valley. Maybe you're actually still physically moving, right? Maybe we have to keep going, like kids who sometimes need to learn by being on the bouncy ball at their desk. So it allows them to focus. Maybe you need to be moving, or maybe you need to be still. We're all different that way. But sometimes, like in nature, it can inspire us to connect in a different way. I love that. Jesus, I'm here and I'm listening, even as you're in nature. Yeah.
I think it needs a topic. So either it comes through reading scripture.
Yeah. Yeah.
When God's speaking to them, and then when you take time to reflect on that, but I think you need a point.
Right.
Like, to me, Jesus, I'm here and listening. I would just be thinking of, well, when am I going to say that again?
Yeah.
Do I time it out like there?
Totally.
So it has some reflection of some. So if you're walking in nature, you know, when you see a beautiful bird, you praise him because you've seen, like, there's a topic of it. Like,
right. Wonderful. That's true. Think about the examples we gave from Jesus' own life, right? So at the loss of a family member and friend, I can imagine when he pulls away to have time by himself, what the theme of that prayer and that time is. It's loss, it's grief, it's frustration. Maybe it's prayers like, God, where are you? How are you present in this? It feels so unfair. When he's making a big decision, I'm sure that was a theme of what he was spending his time doing, praying, listening, waiting. As we're walking through nature, colors regain their clarity. Something new pops around us. Having a focus and intention. I think that's wonderful. Amazing. What else? Yeah, right here.
I think one topic that came up was the amount of time. Mm. Where, like, I'm an extrovert and I like 5 minutes at the end of my day is pretty good for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was talking about how like 2 hours.
Right, 5 minutes is like, we barely even started, man. Yeah, but you, that feels like an eternity.
Yeah.
There's no rule. There's full permission here for when you experiment with it to listen to who God has created you to be, even in your physical wiring. But our default is always to go the easiest path, right? The path of least resistance. So I would encourage you that if you're like, man, 2 minutes or 5 minutes is tough, start there and then see what it means to expand that and to see what God might say as you have prolonged time. Or if it's like an hour or whatever.
24 hours.
Oh, 24 hours. So maybe our sister's challenge is to see how the voice of the community is important to your own learning too. No, I'm just totally joking. That's good. Pay attention to your own rhythms and try to move into it as a discipline. When you start exercising, I like to go for runs. I remember the first time I tried to run like a 3-kilometer loop, dying, you know? Then you can add it. You can go. And I know sometimes that's a bad illustration, breaks down for people who hate the idea of running. Side note, I would never call myself a runner. Those are like those graceful gazelles that you see like loping down the street. I'm like that slogger who's like, I think I love this, but I don't know why it hurts so much. That's me. Okay, let's leave it there. Continue the conversation. I think you guys meet in groups for dinners or whatever you do this week. Continue the conversation. Let me just talk a little bit about this. When I've been thinking about this idea, I always come back to that psalm, be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God. And I used to, like, kind of not, I was, you know, struggling, well, what the heck does that mean? Be still and know that I am God. And even on a basic level, there's something about the stillness that brings a knowledge and awareness. In John chapter 15, Jesus talks about the connected life. I'm the vine, you are the branches. Apart from me, you can do nothing. Remain in me, you'll bear much fruit. This idea of connection with Jesus. And I think that's what all the disciplines help us in. They help us to form these connections with Jesus that ultimately bring transformation and change. They bring the life we're looking for. So even when it feels so counterintuitive, it feels like it's a waste of time to sit and be still. That's what our mind may be telling us. That's what our culture may be telling us. There's so many more important things I need to do. I'm addicted to action. I always have a list of things like, I got to do this. But when I wait, I realize I'm not like the controller of all things. I'm going to go way long, so you'll never have me back. We started this a little bit in our family, this Sabbath rhythm. Shabbat Shalom, the peace of Sabbath. And we just recently started this because we recognize we never take time. We may say we're taking time, but we're never really taking time. And so we've just recently started this, and so we did a 24-hour thing from 6 p.m. one night to 6 p.m. the next night, and the only things we do in those 24 hours are things that replenish our soil. So the first time we did it, and this is brand new, like this is this past week, because we've kind of flirted with it before, but my wife and I wrote it in our rule of life that we just worked through recently, like we're not doing this, we talk about it, we're not doing it. It was so hard for me to sit and not do anything. So I did things that brought life. I went for a run, I read almost a whole book. When we kept tipping into, right, our default was like, hey, what about that? And we're like, that's about work. Let's wait till tomorrow morning to talk about that. All these kinds of things. But I found at the end of the day, I feel so relaxed. I feel so connected to Jesus simply by taking a day. Right? Our Jewish friends have always known this, right? They do this. The country changes and shuts down. We were recently in Israel. The whole thing changes because whether you're like a religious Jew or a non-religious Jew, it's woven into the fabric of the nation that from Friday at 6 to Saturday at 6, they stop. There's something so wonderful about that. And when you connect that to this life of connection with Jesus, man, isn't that whole, it's a whole other, colors begin to regain their clarity. They become bright and full. So here's what I want to do. I want to pray over you. I want you to close your eyes. We're going to use this as a prayer to end. And then I think we're going to sing together. So let me pray this over us on our behalf. And then I'm going to give you a moment just to be quiet. And then I'll end by just saying amen. And we'll sing. So let me pray over us. So Jesus, through your Spirit who is present with us, this moment is for you. We consent now to your action in our minds and in our hearts, in our will and in our soul. We welcome your action. And even in this moment, we prepare ourselves to make room for you. So we sit here, quiet, with our eyes closed, in an attitude of peaceful rest and loving devotion. Our intent is to welcome you. So we choose now to slow down our thoughts and our imaginations. We choose to calm our fears and our emotions. We try to exercise patience and humility, and we offer these back to you as feeble efforts. We lift our soul to you. We are still, and we know that you are God. We are here, quiet, but attentive to you. Jesus, we are here and we are listening. Peace of Christ go with you. Amen.